College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning and welcome to another edition of Better Living, a show about people or organizations having a big impact here in North Texas. I'm your host, Chris Arnold of 105.3 The Fan, and joining us today is Wesley Gentle. He is the executive director of Arts Fort Worth, the legendary nonprofit created to provide funding and leadership that nurtures and supports and promotes the arts throughout the Fort Worth community. Wesley, how are you doing this morning?
Oh, doing very well, Chris. Thank you.
Glad to have you on board. First of all, I've been meaning to talk to someone in the Fort Worth arts community for years, believe it or not. And I'm going to interject some of my history with you. I am not Mr. Arts Guy, but I have lots of friends who are. And I've always known that the Fort Worth arts community is almost like a culture, a subculture. It's like you guys are like your own secret society because it is thriving and it is big time, and you'd have to know about it to know about it. Am I kind of painting the picture right or wrong? Fill me in for me.
I think you're describing it well, and honestly, we don't want it to be a secret, right? It's
right.
Such a great, tight-knit community, but our job is to make sure that people can be welcomed in the community because it's one that's really welcoming. There's so much appreciation and support within the community, and every time I see someone take a step into it and express themselves, it's always embraced. And we want to see more of that.
Well, let me tell you something. Arts Fort Worth has been around since 1963. And it was formed through the Arts Council of Fort Worth. Tell us a little bit about the history. Because, again, I call you guys legendary because I know a couple of things. I have a clue. But, I mean, I think it's just amazing that you guys are doing these things through the nonprofit for all of these years, and you've got such a great reputation.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah, that's legendary. Really an interesting word to use. And I think, sometimes that can sound like an exaggeration, but there really is some legendary things about the Arts Council of Fort Worth, which was established in 1963 as the Arts Council of Greater Fort Worth by Ruth Carter Stevenson, who some of your listeners may know was the daughter of Aben Carter. Name that's probably
There's a stadium. It's kind of famous in TCU and also all the other things that you do. The highways. I mean, Aben Carter is just a legend of Fort Worth.
Oh, really shaped Fort Worth in so many ways. And his daughter, Ruth Carter Stevenson, also was a real trailblazer in her own way. She was a leader in establishing the Aben Carter Museum. But for our story here, she worked with the Junior League of Fort Worth. She worked with some other leaders in the community, and she established the Arts Council really at the time to do what's called federated giving. It's the idea of you pass the hat, everyone puts a little money in the hat, and then we have a pool of money to make some grants to support organizations who are doing good work in our community. At the time, it was really supporting a few performing arts groups, specifically the Boys Choir, the Opera, the Symphony, the ballet, and then shortly after the Arts Council was established, the Clyburn came onto the scene, and they became part of that pool of support. But over the years, the Arts Council, as they continued to support arts groups, found an opportunity in the early 90s to deepen the way that it was supporting our community. At that point, these organizations that had been beneficiaries of the Arts Council's grant making had become very well established and still continue to be very well established. And the Arts Council partnered with the City of Fort Worth, partnered with the National Endowments for the Arts, and began what at the time was called the Neighborhood Arts Program, where it really focused on the communities in Fort Worth where arts and culture, especially the programmatic output of these organizations, the opera, the ballet, the symphony, may not have been reaching the residents, the neighbors in those communities. Whether that's because the ticket price was out of reach, whether that was a geographical issue, maybe they just weren't close to the venues where these performances were happening. So the Arts Council, with our partners, established this program to make sure that these organizations could directly reach these communities, whether that was bringing the community to the hall or popping up in a church, in a community center, in a library. And I think that really planted the seed for the Arts Council, Arts Fort Worth, that we have today, which is this idea of making the arts really accessible to our community so that everyone has the chance to express themselves through art, because we know there's amazing things that happen at a personal level and a community level when people can express and share through these different art forms. And just as importantly, make sure that everyone has the opportunity to experience arts and culture in our community, because we have some amazing organizations and some amazing programs happening. Like you said, it's such a really dynamic and interesting community. We want more people to be a part of it.
Exactly. I like the fact that you're trying to reach on all different levels. It's not just art supporters. It's not just those who have the opportunity to share some of their time, talent, and treasure, but you're reaching all the way down. I like the fact that you guys are involved with what? The policymakers, the cultural mm-hmm. businesses, the independent creatives, the artists themselves. And again, Fort Worth is almost like a secret unless you know. You mentioned Cliburn. Van Cliburn, the late great Van Cliburn, one of the greatest musicians of all time is from Fort Worth. Can you talk about part of his legacy and the things that you guys have done with the Cliburn? And then we'll even talk about some of the other things that you do that I think are very conversational. And I can't wait to share. But you touched on Cliburn. So kind of give people who don't know a little bit of a small biography of the legendary Van Cliburn.
Absolutely. And what I'll say is I'll tease it, but the best way to get immersed in this story and this amazing piece of Fort Worth and really U.S. history is to go onto the Cliburn's website. I think it's thecliburn.org, and go ahead and reserve a free ticket for one of their performances every so many years. For a long time, it's been every 4 years with the pandemic that shifted a little bit. But this summer, they've got their international piano competition, which is their hallmark program. And through that program, they invite the world's best pianists to come and compete with each other and ultimately play with the Fort Worth Symphony for the grand prize. And many of those performances are free to the public to attend. Many of them are at TCU's Cliburn Hall, which is a beautiful space that itself has a museum. That's a tribute to Van Cliburn, where you can learn a little bit more about the story and see the artifacts, the presidential letters, and the awards. The reason why Van Cliburn is so decorated and so beloved in this community is back during the Cold War, when tensions were extremely high with the USSR, Van Cliburn did something almost unthinkable. This pianist from Cowtown, from here, went out to Russia. Mm-hmm. And performed in a competition that was the namesake of a Russian composer that was, by all intents and purposes, supposed to be won by a Russian. And Van Cliburn came in, and by the virtue of his playing, by his amazing personality that shone through in his artistry, he took the first prize place in this competition that an American really had no business even being at. And through that victory, through that amazing feat, he really started to repair relations and ease tensions between our two countries. Mm-hmm. It was a turning point culturally that was well understood by both countries at the time of it happening. And the story is one that you can really dig deeper into, and I encourage people to by visiting the museum, by attending a concert. But the reality is, through artistic diplomacy, we really took a major turn in the histories of our two countries.
Exactly. I love the story. And I also love the fact that, you know, a lot of people and a lot of kids, when they're going to school in art classes or whatever, they are music classes, they hear Van Cliburn and they kind of say, oh yeah, he's like Beethoven or Chopin or even, you know, Mozart. They're like, but no, he's not 200 years old. He's from Fort Worth, and he was alive during the 20th century. So it's amazing the impact that he had in the world of music. And that also, now follow me along on this. This is not too big of a reach. I ironically had seen the movie A Complete Unknown, the Bob Dylan story, Timothy Chalamet. I don't know if you've seen it yet, but I'm sure you know about Bob Dylan. And my son actually attends TCU. He's on the track team. He is the one that insisted that I have to see this movie. I was like, wait a minute, he's only 19 years old. And I already knew about Bob Dylan, but he didn't. So I'm watching this movie. By the way, it's nominated for 6 or 7 Academy Awards, and Chalamet is nominated for Best Actor. I'm watching this movie, and you see the impact of a guy like Bob Dylan not only in the music world, but like you said, in the world itself, in culture, in the 1960s, and his lyrics and the music that he, the impact that it has to this day. And it's kind of like Clyburn. It's kind of similar, but a little bit different. Am I stretching this a little bit? You tell me.
No, not at all. I think that's exactly it. It's, the power of song, the power of art, the power of what, you know, one person can share with the world and connect with people, right? Because we have these common experiences, but also get people to think differently, you know, maybe approach these common experiences in ways we've never thought to approach them before.
Exactly. And like you said, through the music, through the arts, it's like, guess what? We all have something in common, but also the historic impact that it can have. And like you said, Van Cliburn, he's just legendary. And he basically made a lot of people attracted to Fort Worth to look at arts. And the Kimball Art Museum is one of the greatest museums in the world. Can you mention about how that has impacted Fort Worth as well?
Absolutely. Well, I can tell you a quick story. I was on an airplane. I think I was coming back from Washington, D.C., flying into DFW. The person sitting next to me, we struck up a conversation and I asked him, well, you're not from Fort Worth. Why are you flying to Fort Worth right now? Or, you know, the Metroplex. And they said, well, I was over in Europe. I was in Ireland. And I missed this show. It was only going to show in two museums in the entire world, and I missed it. I was there just a week too late, and I asked the person at the museum, "Is there any way I can see the show, before it goes away?" They said, "Well, yeah, it's going to be at the Kimball. If you find yourself in Fort Worth, Texas." So sure enough, this person booked a flight to the U.S., booked a flight down to Fort Worth. And they were going to see this show that was only going to be at one other place. And I think that's the power of an institution like the Kimball, which we're really, really fortunate. And I say fortunate. We've been fortunate to have great leaders who have established these amazing museums like the Kimball, like the Modern Art Museum, like the Amy Carter Museum, that are able to really work at a national scale and bring in some of the most impressive shows. But then also they work with local artists and they, leverage their space and their collection and their expertise to really amplify what's happening locally as well. So the Kimball, fantastic venue where the Lone Star Film Society had their film festival this past fall, partially at the Kimball's auditorium. We mentioned the Clyburn, they perform many times at the Kimball. And all our museum partners are working with local artists. Eamon Carter has a fantastic community artist program where they hire local artists to engage the community and create works of art that reflect works in their permanent collection. So it's this really amazing thing, again, that is special to Fort Worth. We've got these remarkable institutions that are known by people all over the world. We're also doing really interesting things at the local level, taking that international prestige and ability and filtering it through really talented individuals that we have living in our community.
We're talking with Wesley Gentle. He is the executive director of Arts Fort Worth, and we're talking about the Fort Worth art scene in particular on the various levels. And with that being said, I got to also tell you that I became intrigued with the Fort Worth art scene way back in the 1990s when a buddy of mine who I met, he was running track a lot, and he was always doing a lot of different things. He had gone to TCU back in the day, in those days. And his dad was an art collector. And of course, he grew up in Fort Worth. And then he became involved heavily in arts. And he was telling me, because I was asking him, well, what makes that painting right there so valuable? And why is that one not so valuable? And he said, it's all about the interpretation. And those who see the value in that particular art. So I was already curious about it anyway. And his dad passed away. His name was William Runyon. And they collected a lot of arts, but he was very into athletics and things as well. And I was just always curious about this. It was, I don't know, I always thought Fort Worth was just a very cool part of Texas that's just so low-key, you just got to know or you know. And then I wound up hearing about the Caravan of Dreams, that the Bass family created this jazz mecca on top of this building, downtown Fort Worth. Can you talk about that a little bit as well, or the fact that Fort Worth has had a vibrant arts community all these years, music, arts itself? I mean, I could go on and on and on about how Fort Worth, low-key, has been doing things for years.
Absolutely. I mean, Caravan of Dreams is such a good example. And you mentioned the legacy of jazz in this community. We can go back even further. Many people don't realize, but the father of free jazz, as he's well known, Ornette Coleman, is from Fort Worth. Mm-hmm. And many people, even in the jazz community, are surprised to learn that fact. But Fort Worth has had a strong history, specifically with jazz, but with so many art forms, Texas swing, many singer-songwriters.
Let me throw in a great Grammy Award winning blues legend.
Oh, absolutely.
Leon Bridges.
Yep.
Right there in Fort Worth.
Leon Bridges, Fort Worth's own. And we've been talking about the Oscars, and we got to mention Abraham Alexander too, who's nominated right now. And actually the piece that he's nominated for was in Sing Sing, which was showcased at the Lone Star Film Festival. So we've got all sorts of connections, which I think, you mentioned how interesting this community is. Its connections, I think, also are part of what make it so strong, that these different art forms, these different organizations, these different people connect in so many ways to lift each other up. And the venues that takes place in, like you said, the Caravan of Dreams, are such a big part of that history and that ongoing story. Caravan of Dreams, of course, was eventually closed, but the Bass family really helped lead the community in establishing Bass Performance Hall, which continues to be such an important venue for this community. And then, of course, we've got other smaller venues where there's any number of types of performances happening right now this weekend. As people are listening to this, the John Ballou Festival is going on across North Texas. And here in Fort Worth, Tulips is helming that festival, which, for people who aren't familiar, is a week of free concerts. So if you show up at one of the venues like Tulips, you walk in, they encourage you to RSVP so they can make space. But it's a chance to hear a huge range of singer-songwriters, bands playing in different genres. And it's a way to really get to know outstanding musicians who are from Fort Worth or from the North Texas area, who are doing really incredible things far, far beyond the Metroplex.
You guys are kind of like an umbrella, too, because it seems like a lot of things go through you, a lot of information goes through, and on your website, which is phenomenal. For those who need to check out the website, it's artsfortworth.org. Arts, not FT, but FORT. artsfortworth.org. And I was perusing the fine work on the website, and I could just see all the things that you guys are associated with: the Arts Forward Summit, the Texas Artist Coalition, the Heart of Gold Awards Luncheon, the Public Art Tours, the Emerging Artist Residency. Can you talk about any of those in any degree, and some of the things that people can find out about if they wanted to be involved?
Oh, absolutely. And I appreciate you spending some time on the website. In fact, we're working with a partner right now, and in a few months, we hope to launch a new website with some really interesting tools to help our community navigate this arts ecosystem, all the different venues, and discover artists and opportunities and experiences. So that's forthcoming. And we're actually going to tease a little bit of that at the Arts Summit that you just mentioned. And I'm glad you did, because I think that really summarizes what we've been talking about, this idea of bringing together all these different parts of the arts community, but also helping people discover and enter into this arts community. So on March 29th, that's Saturday at the end of March, we're hosting an event kind of in the first part of the day, the morning, the afternoon, where we are doing a couple things. There's going to be an exhibition space where people can stop by and just learn about some of the activities and opportunities that are in our community, whether that's a place to go see a performance, whether that's maybe a summer camp to send your kids to. That's a place for people to discover what's happening here in Fort Worth. But beyond that and deeper than that, we're going to have some opportunities for people to engage with the arts. There's going to be some interactive art experiences. And then there's going to be a whole sequence of seminars, panels, chances for people who are in all these different parts of our creative sector to spend time with each other, to talk about some of the most important issues in our community. And this coming summit, we're going to be talking about arts education beyond the classroom. So what it looks like to have people who are innovating in the arts education space, how our institutions like museums and others are working in the classroom and bringing students out of the classroom. We're going to be talking about, it's a really interesting headline, it's Prescription Arts. And it's all the ways that arts supports mental health, supports physical health, and supports community health. And then the last track, these will all be kind of concurrent talks and seminars that people can attend, is all about the evolving perspectives that we're seeing. So how is artificial intelligence impacting the arts? What are some innovative things that artists are trying in the ways that they showcase their art? And what's happening across the state of Texas? You know, we talk about what's happening here in Fort Worth. Well, what are our friends and colleagues doing outside of, you know, our city and our area? So the summit is, I think, a really good summation of what we're talking about here, this coming together as a community and then welcoming more and more people into that community.
I mentioned a little earlier about the public arts tour and the different tours that can you talk about some of that a little bit and the cultural district for those who aren't aware about it? And it's like, wait a minute, there's a cultural district?
Yeah, in fact, we're fortunate to have two cultural districts now officially recognized by the state here in Fort Worth. So the cultural district that I'm talking to you from is the historic cultural district, really goes all the way back to 1936 when our friend Emmy Carter was a little bit jealous that maybe our friends to the east in Dallas were selected for the centennial celebration. So Emmy Carter decided we would do a Western centennial, you know, something a little bit different.
Sure.
And helped us establish what's now Casa Manana and the Will Rogers Center, two amazing spaces for performance cultural exchange.
By the way, Casa Manana, you've got to go there for a play. If you haven't been there for a play or a musical, you're missing out. I'm talking about anybody who's listening to this show right now. You got to go.
Oh, definitely. And if you can't, you know, I know some people maybe can't sit through 90 minutes or a little bit longer, or maybe live theater is not your thing, which I encourage you to try it if you haven't tried it and decide for yourself. But Casa Manana also has a really amazing cabaret theater, intimate, you know, sit down with some friends, have drinks, live music and storytelling. So I encourage anyone who hasn't tried that to definitely rush to the website because those tickets go really fast.
The Botanical Gardens, the Botanic Gardens, that's another part of the tour?
Yes, the Botanic Gardens are a long established part of the cultural district. And if you are looking at the public art walking tour, or you can also do the tour by bike, you'll find a ton of pieces that are in the public art collection that are sited at the Botanic Gardens. So as you move around the gardens, you'll see a wide range of sculptures and different installations. And those come from many different artists in many different periods of time in Fort Worth's history. And if you're using the resource that we have on our website, you can learn a lot about Fort Worth just in the Botanic Gardens alone.
So let's say I'm an artist, unsung, or a complete unknown, as I mentioned a little earlier. I see on the website, of course, you got different opportunities like the Emerging Artist Residency, where, you know, you're able to maybe hook up some artists with studio space for free, or maybe even showcase some of their work in some of these residency programs. Can you talk about some of those things? And I think that's so creative, and it allows people who say, hey, who do I need to talk to? Well, go to the website. You can find out who to talk to and maybe get yourself an opportunity.
That's exactly it. And as I mentioned, we're going to be rolling out a resource fairly soon, the next couple months, that makes it even easier to do that. So you can literally search available opportunities by the type of art that you're doing, by the area, by the time that that opportunity is available. And then for people who have opportunities or even want to create opportunities, we hear so often from business owners, people who have maybe hair salons or spaces where people are coming and going all the time, mm-hmm. that want to reach out to artists and showcase their work. We want to create a platform where they can produce opportunities and they can leverage their space and resources to help artists continue to show what they're doing in this community. But yeah, on the website, as it is right now, we have some of those available. We've been really, really grateful for our partners at the North Texas Community Foundation, who helped make that emerging artist residency possible, not only, as you said, in providing space, but we were also able to provide stipends, monthly stipends, to help artists produce a body of work that they showcase. And we're really excited that Xavier Carter, the current artist in resident, will be showcasing a body of work at multiple venues coming up here in March, including Kinfolk House, which is a really awesome gallery established by Letitia Cedric Huckabee over on the east side of Fort Worth.
Fantastic. Wesley, I got to ask you this because we got a mutual friend, Amy Razor, and she's the one that told me all about you. She's working with Arts Fort Worth now, and she's telling me all about you. And I just wanted to know how you got involved with this. And again, you seem to be the perfect executive director. What got you involved? Let everybody know about yourself a little bit.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I got to also sing Amy's praises. She's such an amazing person, as you know. She herself, has a background in the arts, owned a small business for a while in the arts. And she's really, mm-hmm. really carried our mission, so, so wonderfully. Myself, I have a long history with the arts. Professionally, I briefly worked as an opera singer. So mm-hmm. I studied
look at you. That's great.
Yeah, that was an experience, and I was really fortunate to have some wonderful mentors, and they helped me navigate the opera industry for a little bit, just long enough to learn that my passion is really in supporting others' careers and supporting others who want to take a similar journey. So I found myself moving from performing opera to working for the Fort Worth Opera and their administration. And from there, moved to the symphony, and from there had an opportunity to support the Arts Council. And here we are a little over 6 years later. There is an opportunity for me to step into the leadership role. And I've been very, very honored to have that opportunity. And really, it just affords me the chance to spend time with so many people who are involved in these amazing creative enterprises and deeply passionate about what they do. So I get to spend all my days learning about new things and trying to share them with others.
And connecting people. I love Absolutely. The fact that you guys are a facilitator, with all the networking going on nowadays. The Arts Fort Worth is the place to find out what's really going on with Fort Worth. And again, I got a quick shout out to my buddy, John Runyon. He's the one that told me about the arts in Fort Worth, like way back in the 1990s. And I've just been keeping an eye on it, from afar. And every now and then I'll pop over and I'll do some things and check out things. And I'm like, it is just thriving. And it's believe it or not, it's just like Fort Worth is as a whole. It's like, we know what we're doing. We'll spread the word. You'll hear about it. And it's like, it's not like you have to brag about it. It is what it is. And I think you guys are doing a fantastic job. And like you said, this is just another opportunity to share what's really going on in Fort Worth.
Yeah. And then to share and to invite. I mean, you're welcome anytime. I hope you don't, let those intervals get too long between your visits and reach out if you're ever in town. We'd love to help you see what's going on.
Most definitely. As far as anybody else who's listening, is there anything else you want to say? In other words, do you want to mention any other contacts or partners or any upcoming events? And of course, you can always check out all the information on artsfortworth.org. Go ahead, Wesley. Is there anything else you'd like to share?
Absolutely. So we mentioned the summit, the Arts Ford Summit. If you go on the website and purchase a ticket there, what I'll say for anyone listening, and for anyone who's not listening and anyone who is interested in going mm-hmm. to the summit, we've got tickets that are the regular price. We've got the opportunity to pay it forward. And for anyone who's unable to purchase a ticket to attend the event, we encourage you to reach out to us, talkto at artsfortworth.org. Just let us know. We've got tons and tons of opportunities to sponsor or provide a scholarship to attend the summit. And of course, the space to discover things and that exhibition space will be free for anyone to stop by and just learn about the community. So mark your calendar for March 29. Come spend some time learning about the arts, dig into the arts, get involved, make a little bit of art. And I think that's the other message too. Just everyone is creative. Everyone has a spark and a way to share the story that they have. And we all have a story. So I encourage you to, if you can't make it to the summit, if you, you know, don't feel comfortable diving headfirst into certain arts and culture things, dip your toe in the water. And like you mentioned, we've got a great resource on our website, and we'll have even more resources rolling out. And I encourage people to find something. And this year, 2025, go try something new. Go see a show for the first time, or take a class, or experience something you never considered experience before.
Exactly. He is Wesley Gentle. He's the Executive Director of Arts Fort Worth. Wesley, we got to have you on again real soon. Thank you.
Hey, it's been a pleasure.
Joining us now is a longtime great conversationalist and expert on mental wellness and suicide prevention, Miss Fonda Bryant. Fonda, how you doing?
I'm doing okay today. How are you doing?
I am fine. I think you're the perfect person to talk about this because I saw this article called The Aloneness Epidemic, The Antisocial Century. And it's talking about how technology and coming out of this pandemic, there is a mental health crisis with loneliness. And the irony about all this, you have talked about this in your own way over the last year on this show. Can you talk about how you're not surprised about how loneliness has reached a tipping point in this country?
Yes, thank you for having me and talking about this subject. I don't think we talk about it enough, but you know, loneliness, it all, you know, it's one of those things where it's nothing wrong with being alone, but the thing is with loneliness, it can lead to other things. Mm-hmm. You know, I talk about my own journey with suicide and how almost 30 years ago, I was alone with my thoughts. And that's the thing. A lot of times when we're alone with our thoughts, unfortunately, especially if you're dealing with a mental health condition or going through a bad day, your thoughts can turn into action and your actions can turn into your death. And that's what almost happened to me. I was alone with my thoughts. I was struggling with depression, and those thoughts almost went into action. So when I do the QPR, question, persuade, refer, suicide prevention training, before we really get into the meat of the training, I always tell everybody, I said, guys, as good as QPR, suicide prevention training is, and it's really good, the biggest way to help someone is through checking on people. And that's something, Chris, we really have got out of doing because of phones,
yep,
and social media.
Yep.
We do not check on people.
Correct. Not in person. Not the way we used to. Not where you used to go down the street or around the corner in your neighborhood, or even if it's just family, go visit them to see how they're doing firsthand and not just the text.
Yes. And now it's turned into we might text, we might call. So I always remind people, I said, guys, the best way to save someone's life is simply caring, checking on people. If you got a neighbor, especially an elderly neighbor, because in the county, in a lot of counties, and in one particular in the Charlotte area, they said that they have a very high rate of suicide among the elderly. And see, when you start getting older, things start changing. You might not drive anymore. People who you used to hang around with are dying, or, you know, they're in bad shape, so they can't call you. Your family kind of takes you for granted a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you need to go to the store at 1 o'clock and they come flying up at 2, and you don't want to say anything. And so they start feeling like, hey, I'm a burden. People aren't checking on me. So if you got a neighbor that you know lives by themselves and you don't see people really checking on them, go knock on the door and ask them how they're doing today. It could make a humongous difference. And if we're going to text, which most of us do, if you're going to send somebody a text message and say, hey, how are you doing today? And they text you back and they say, I'm straight. I'm okay.
Yeah.
I'm all right.
I'm good.
Pick up the phone and call them.
Mm-hmm.
And when you call them, say, hey, I was just, you know, wanting to ask, are you sure you're okay?
I was just thinking about you. Yeah.
Just thinking, are you sure you're okay? And be willing to listen without judgment, because sometimes we don't need y'all to fix stuff.
Yeah,
sometimes
just listen. Just listen. We're talking to suicide prevention expert, Ms. Fonda Bryant. And Fonda, again, what caught my eye on this article, it said in 2023, the Surgeon General published an 81-page warning about America's epidemic of loneliness, claiming that its negative health effects were on par with those of tobacco use and obesity. And a growing number of public officials, public health officials, seem to regard that loneliness as the developed world's next critical public health issue. And the United Kingdom, that's England, has now a minister for loneliness. And so does Japan. And here's where it really touched the nerve with me. It said self-imposed solitude, in other words, aloneness, not just loneliness, aloneness, just may be the most important social fact of the 21st century in America. And I bring this up to you because you have been hinting all along whenever we've had these conversations about so-and-so committed suicide and nobody saw it coming. Or so-and-so went into a mental depression, but no one saw it coming. And you mentioned, like I said, sometimes people just need to talk and not just listen to somebody else. They want to talk. And so you have to be available to reach out to people. So with that being said, let me just catch up with you real quick here to put this thing in perspective. Because you reached out to me, a couple of weeks ago and said that you had to talk to some groups because another teenager committed suicide.
Yes. Yes. It really, you know, anytime people will always come and tell me when somebody dies by suicide because they know what I do. And I was in a grocery store and the manager came up to me and said, Fonda, there was a suicide at a local high school, A.L. Brown High School. And he didn't know many of the particulars, but a couple of weeks later, I just happened to be getting my car fixed. Mm-hmm. And the lady behind the counter's daughter went to school with the young lady. And she told me it was a Black female in the 11th grade who, and the means, you know, at the end of the day, it really doesn't matter the means that they did it. It just matters that somebody died. They took their own life. They were in so much pain. But this just like was a mule kicking me in the chest that a 16 or 17 year old female took a firearm and took her own life. That lets me know she was in a lot of pain. And that also lets me know that in those moments, she felt like no one would understand. And she probably felt like she couldn't go and talk to someone. She was carrying that all by herself. And that just lets me know again, we need to do better with communication. Because you know something, Chris? Communication is a dying art.
Yeah.
When I was growing up, it was not. You would sit around the table on Sunday. I remember, you know, I'm a football fan, but I didn't become a football fan as far as watching football till I got older. Because on Sundays, it was sacred to sit down at the dinner table yep. with your relatives.
Sunday dinner.
Cut that TV off and have a conversation.
Yeah. And that's what's
we've
lacking.
Lost that.
Yeah, we've lost that. In fact, I'm going to give you some more information to show you why they say this has become an antisocial world. In other words, they call it social media, but it really is the 21st century is the century of solitude. Listen to these numbers. Following the pandemic, more and more people get their food brought to them. They don't go out to eat. The food is delivered, or they go to the restaurant to pick up the food. They say across the country in restaurants, in dining has dropped 74%.
Man.
In dining. So, you know, of course, it's hitting the service industry because you always hear these stories about people not getting the tips or the tips aren't being paid right or they haven't had minimum wage raised in I don't know how many years. People are not dining inside restaurants. They'll have an area set up where they can pick up their food. And then it goes even deeper because you mentioned the phone, you mentioned television. They said this all started ironically in the 1970s where people started driving more and living further out from their job. In other words, they could live out in the suburbs or they could live anywhere further from where their job actually has to be. And then they started watching more and more television. And as you know, right now, With Netflix, you don't even have to go to the movie theaters. They said it used to be people would go to the movies 4 times a month on average. Now, people consume television 19 hours a week. 19 hours a week. And they go to the movies maybe 4 times a year. It's crazy, but those numbers are true. And they say people have their homes set up where they can be isolated. They can be, you know, they can have a few friends over if they want, but everything they need, the convenience of it all is right there in their home. They have a TV room or, a place where they can just all gather around the TV, or the TV is on their phone. They can just watch what they need on their phone in their own bedroom, in their own apartment, where they don't have to really see anybody. And because of social media, they have control of their access. In other words, they have control. You personally have control of how often you reach out to people, or how often people can reach out to you. All because of convenience and technology. And therefore, there's a few people that wind up sliding off, and you don't know they've slid off into loneliness, or slid off into depression, or slid off into they're not feeling well mentally, sometimes until it's too late. And that's where we are.
That's where we are. The suicides, I think a lot of times, Chris, people don't equate loneliness sometimes with suicide, because again, with suicide, it's not reported in the media. Mm-hmm. And when they do hear about it, it's usually a murder suicide or a celebrity dying by suicide. So therefore, they think that suicides are isolated incidents. But when you peel back that onion and see how bad suicide is in this country, and not just this country, but globally, you have to equate that also with loneliness, people not checking on people, or people assuming, sometimes when I do stories with the media, and they had that thumbnail up there of us, like, we look very depressed, we're leaning over, we just look really depressed. But I tell people that we can be in your face smiling, or we can talk to you on the phone and put that front on that everything's okay, and it's not okay. And we just have become a society that really does not care about one another anymore. We don't take the time. When we really ask people how are they doing, do we really want to know the answer? We're just saying,
telling the truth, because what you're saying is correct, and it applies to social media. You're talking about how when you see somebody and they say, oh, they're okay, or they have this smile on their face, but that inside they're not the same way. Look on social media. A lot of social media, whether it's Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, whatever, people have a facade up there. They'll have the picture of them all happy or posed up next to a place where they seem to be having fun, or is that really their car in the background? Those kind of things are an image, and they think that image projects them and everything's okay, or projects them as they're living the life, or everybody's happy where I am. And they say in this particular article I was reading, says the individual preference for solitude is scaled across society and is exercised repeatedly over time, rewiring America's civic and psychic identity, and the consequences are far-reaching for our happiness, our communities, even our understanding of reality. Fonda, you just told me the other day that because Facebook took away one of their things to verify if something's true, fact check, it's making people not know what to trust, because they don't know if this information is real or not, and that's stressful.
Very. You know, it's stories on there, because at first I kind of bought into it. And then I all you got to do is type in the celebrity's name or whatever the story is. Mm-hmm. And it's not even on there, but they're putting out their false stuff. And when you go and look at what people are saying, now some people catch it right off the bat, but it's so many people that buy into that. It's just scary. It's just scary, because they've removed fact check now. So any and everybody can post stuff on there that's not true. And it's people who are taking that in and thinking it's true and causing Anxiety. And people just really don't realize how bad anxiety is to be worrying about stuff you can't control or may not happen or even won't even happen. But people will read that stuff, and especially if you're a person who might be isolated or lonely or don't have people to talk to, and you buy into that stuff, which just increases your depression, your anxiety. And it's just a vicious, vicious cycle, and it's just getting out of hand.
And here's part of the irony as well. It's an addiction to your phone to access information. This article says the typical person is awake for about 900 minutes a day. American kids and teenagers spend on average about 270 minutes on weekdays and 380 minutes on weekends gazing into their screens. Gazing into their screens. And we already know that technology creates those screens in a way where it like gives you dopamine. It's like, okay, I got to find out the next story, or I got to see the next TikTok video. I got to see the next, I got to read the comments, the posts. I got to see what the, you know, it just it never ends. And it's hard to set that phone down. And it's especially hard if you think you're trying to get some good night's sleep, but you got the phone charging by your bed. And there you are. You lean over because you got to have the phone there because it's got your alarm on it. You got to make sure you get up. And how many hours of sleep did you really get? How much quality sleep did you really get? And how much does that affect your mental wellness, your mental
It
health?
does. And I always tell students when I'm talking to them, especially the ones getting ready to go off to college, I tell them, I said, do me a favor. I said, I want y'all to go old school. Get you a clock. Power your cell phones down an hour before you go to bed and use your clock to wake you up, not your cell phone. I said, because y'all, as soon as those lights go off, illuminate, it wakes up your brain. It's like somebody's tapping on your shoulder saying, hey, you need to wake up because you need to do this. And when you look at what's going on college campuses with the suicide rates on college campuses, second leading cause of death on college campuses, suicide is also over 24,000 college students attempt. And all of these stats that I'm giving everyone are underreported. So it's a whole lot worse. And you remember that song that came out, and I'm older than you, but years ago, and it's one of my favorite songs, and it really talks about it. The song that the Beatles made, Eleanor Rigby. And
Yes, you can
talking
see it
about
on
all the
YouTube.
lonely people, where do they all come from?
Right.
And it's really when they made that song, it was in the 60s. But just think about how much worse it has gotten for loneliness. And something I wanted to let you know, because I pulled up an article on loneliness and it said this, and that's why I tell people, check on people, even if
Yes.
they don't check on you,
Yes.
because it said they might not reach out to you. So if you're concerned that they might be lonely, take the initiative to connect with them. See if you can get them to meet up with you at a local cafe or community center to share a cup of tea, talk, walk in the park, or do whatever is most fun for both of you. Think of it as a way to positively impact somebody else's health in addition to your own. And I'll take it further. It can and might save somebody's life.
Exactly. And that's what this is all about. This is what this conversation is all about with Fonda Bryant. And again, it's like where we are and how we can solve some of the things that are affecting not only us, but our kids. And back to the kids, you were mentioning about how videos and texting friends is not even close to face-to-face interaction. This article goes on to say, that's one thing to worry about. What are they looking at online? That's not even the most important thing is what are they not doing anymore? Which is they're not going out, hanging out with each other. They're not outside playing. They're not going out on dates. They're not going to get their driver's license. In fact, fewer kids in different cities or small towns are getting their driver's license anymore. They said because you can get an Uber. You know, they can get a Lyft. They don't have to have a driver's license. They're talking about how the they've done the numbers. The number of boys and girls who say they met up with their friends almost daily outside of school hours has declined nearly 50% since the early 1990s. 50%.
Man.
They don't hang out face to face. They don't get together anymore outside of school itself. And this affects how people grow and how they develop. It really does affect how the best kind of play, of course, is physical, outdoors with kids, supervised and unsupervised. In other words, they learn when they're unsupervised as well as how to manage conflict and tolerate pain.
Exactly. And when these young people do not know how to resolve conflict, that's why so many fights.
Boom.
And I'll take it a step further. Working in the school system at a high school during lunchtime, I'm telling you, I couldn't wait to go to lunch or go to PE and get out and play and talk to your friends. Their faces are stuck in their cell phones.
Yep. And you know what?
Their faces are stuck in their phones.
And you know what? Like I said, we've been talking about this for a while now, but teenage anxiety and depression are at near record level highs.
Mm-hmm.
Here are the latest survey, government survey says they conducted this in 2023. It found out that more than half of teenage girls said they felt persistently sad or hopeless. Persistently sad. This is half of teenage girls in America. So just imagine, you know, imagine the loneliness, or imagine what, because, you know, didn't you, you told me this a long time ago, teenage girls especially are always judged, or they feel like they're being judged. And this
was
like, this is even before, even phones and tablets and social media bullying. This, they were always feeling judged either by their peers or by people who didn't know them. And that's part of the teenage experience. Boys were judged too, but teenage girls in particular, they're judged by each other, let alone boys. So you add on the fact that they don't spend real time with each other. It's a consequence. And that's why we're trying to share this information, to let people know there are solutions to this. And the solutions are, get involved with things in person. And get involved with your kids, get involved with your families, get involved with your seniors, like you said. There are ways to connect beyond just the tablet or phone.
Definitely. And one thing I want to mention to parents, because I'm a parent, even though my son's 41, I'm a parent. And the thing
There's no way you got a 40-year-old. I thought you were 41.
No, my son
kidding,
is.
Yeah.
But you know, one of the things I used to say to my son when he was in high school, he was a very good student all the way through K through 12th grade. And, you know, then he started playing football and everything. And I used to always say, just go to school, make good grades and play sports. You have nothing to worry about. That was doing him a disservice, because they do have stuff to worry about. And he graduated from high school in 2001. So imagine how much worse it has gotten. And so I always tell parents, when I have the opportunity to talk to them, I tell them this: listen to your children. Hear what they're saying and don't be judgmental, because if they can't come and talk to you about the small stuff, they're not going to come and talk to you about the big stuff. Case in point, sextortion is killing our young people, especially males. And that's when a predator gets online, pretends like they're female for the most part, and asks for a naked picture or body part picture. Mm-hmm. And at first, the young person might not want to send it. But eventually they send them one of somebody they sextorted from, and they send it to them. And then once they send that picture of them, then they start getting messages. If you don't pay me, I'm going to tell your family. I'm going to ruin your life. And this is where I tell parents, you have to listen to your kids, because instead of some of these young people going to their parents and saying, hey, I made a bonehead mistake, I sent a naked picture to somebody and now they're trying to get money from me.
Yeah.
Instead of going to tell your parents, they're taking their own lives.
CBS
Evening News did a story and said that sextortion has gotten so bad that they have had 9 and 10-year-olds going in their mom purses, their dad's wallets, and taking money to try to pay a sextortionist. That's why I'm telling you, you got to listen to your kids, hear what they're saying, and not judge them, and be willing to help them. Because any child should be able to come to their parent and tell them anything without being afraid. And I mean, I know they can be afraid, but parents, we're supposed to help our children. And that just really breaks my heart that you got kids that young taking their own life because they did something stupid. And in their mind, they can't go tell their parents.
Right. It's all about staying connected face to face and not just via social media or just those kind of communications, because socially undeveloped children who have socially undeveloped childhoods leads to socially stunted adulthood. And there have been surveys and studies that say, and I'm sending this article. I had to talk to you about it because I'm reading this article and it's all making sense. It says there are so many people who are in their 20s or even in their high school ages would rather just stay at home. They're too tired or too anxious to leave the house. And it's much easier to just look at a screen. It's mm-hmm. not even cabin fever. It's just something that they prefer. It's mm-hmm. America's most isolated generation. And they aren't even trying to leave the house. They would prefer solitude. And some of them are not unhappy. We're not saying that everybody that wants to be alone is unhappy. But guess what? They're missing some things. And the ones who are unhappy, you don't hear about them. And sometimes until it's too late. Can you tell some people again some of the resources where they can reach out to some phone numbers or, you know, some online places? And again, that some of the same things that you've been saying as long as you've been on this show from time to time, telling people how they can reach out if they're feeling alone or they're feeling like their thoughts are overwhelming them, or as a lot of people say, they're just overthinking.
Yes. Well, I would be more than happy to pass on some numbers. Number one, you, of course, can call or text 988. And I always tell people that's the National Crisis Suicide Hotline, but you do not have to be suicidal. You can just be having a crappy day, as I always tell young people, mm-hmm. and you feel like you can't talk to your parents or anybody. You can text to 988 and go back and forth. And I read a report that said, when youth are in crisis, only 5% call the National Suicide Hotline. They would rather text. That's just how they are. So you can text or call 988. Another number that you can reach out to and call or text actually is a National Crisis text number. And you can text one word, HELP, to 741741. You can text one word, HELP, 741741, and you can speak to some, you can go back and forth texting, and you don't have to be suicidal again. But if you text and, hey, I'm gonna hurt myself, I don't wanna be here, of course, they are going to follow up mm-hmm. and check on you to make sure you're okay. I always tell people, help is just a phone call away. And in Texas, every state now is starting to get a warm line. I am very proud of that. And Texas has them too. And you can call 211 for Texas Mental Health Crisis Services, and they can put you in touch with the warm line. Or you can type in Texas warm line. And the thing is, the difference between a warm line and a crisis line is exactly what it kind of says. Mm-hmm. We're not quite suicidal. We're not quite in crisis. And if we can just talk to someone who's going to listen and not judge us, more likely than not, we're not going to go into crisis or become suicidal. And also the crisis lines, but the warm lines are manned by people like me. A peer support who's yeah. been through dealing with depression, a mental health condition, substance abuse, some of them been in prison, all of the above. They've gotten their lives together and now they're turning around and helping others, because who better to help someone than somebody who's been down that road?
Exactly.
So I tell people, reach out to those warm lines. In Texas, you can reach out 211 and they can put you in touch, or you can type in Texas warm lines, because more and more states, Chris, are coming up with warm lines. And I think it's a wonderful, wonderful thing.
I totally agree. And you are also big on suicide prevention, QPR training. Can you tell people where they can find more information on QPR training for those people who have to deal with someone in their lives who may have tried to attempt suicide or who may be vulnerable to suicide?
Sure. You can always reach out to me on social media. I'm Fonda Bryant on Facebook, on Instagram, and Twitter. I'm Proud Mom 72. And also people can even email me at Fonda, F-O-N-D-A, N-C underscore the number 40 at yahoo.com. QPR is similar to CPR. A lot of people know CPR and they know it's to help someone in a medical emergency. Same thing with QPR. It's to help someone in a medical emergency. And I know sometimes people are a little leery to help somebody who might be suicidal or in crisis, but I tell everybody it's no different than CPR. If you help somebody who had a heart attack or stroke and they died on the way to the hospital or down the road, is that your fault? No, because you did everything you could to help them. Same thing with QPR. You can save our lives and you could, and that person could still die down the road. And I tell everybody, we have to put in the work. So that's not your fault. We have to want to live.
Fonda, thank you again. And thank you all for joining us for Better Living, a show about people or organizations having a big impact here in North Texas. I'm your host, Chris Arnold. So long, everybody.